Buenas tardes, Shai Wu Hao, and welcome to Planting Medicine. We are airing live from KPFA on Ohlone Land in Berkeley and KPFK on Tongva Land in Los Angeles. I'm Violet Moon. I'm a clinical Western and energetic herbalist, a punk California native plant botanist, tattoo artist, and today's host. If you're new to Planting Medicine, we are the next of kin of the now retired program, The Herbal Highway, that was hosted by Karen Sanders and Sarah Holmes for over 27 years. And at Planting Medicine, we hope to carry the torch of The Herbal Highway and enhance our listening community's knowledge of herbal medicine by sharing voices of traditional holistic healers and diverse healing practices, as diversity enriches our craft. On this episode, we're going back on the road for another herbal travelogue. On my last travelogue, back in July of 2025, I took you to the coastal mountains and near deserts of Southern California in search of California peony. On today's show, we'll be staying closer to my home and traveling around the SF Bay Area for an episode entitled The Search for Yerba Mansa. Now, before we get this show on the road, I should take a minute to explain the rules of the road. Planting Medicine is a platform where we've agreed to advocate for wild planting and tending over wild crafting. These herbal travelogues are not meant to provide anyone with a treasure map to the Big Rock Candy Mountains of Yerba Mansa, or any other plant for that matter. This is not a step-by-step walkthrough on how to dig up and process wild roots in wild places, especially those already threatened by climate change, over-harvesting, and urban development, as such as is with Yerba Mansa. My hope and aspiration is that by offering this educational passenger seat to you, our listeners can walk away from today's show informed and eager to identify, grow, protect, and practice medicine with Yerba Mansa at home, to spread and plant gardens and new stands of Yerba Mansa near you, and widen our family of herbal and human allies so that we can have a big positive impact on the health of our communities and the lands that sustain us. On this search for Yerba Mansa, we'll explore the medicinal properties and uses of Yerba Mansa, its ecology and botanical intrigue, identification cues, how to grow Yerba Mansa at home, and we'll go in the field to the Carquinez Strait of the San Francisco Bay Delta to visit a marshland community of Yerba Mansa and travel to the Mount Diablo foothills with my good friend, botanist, and road dog, Angela Pye. You know, one of the reasons I was so interested in deep diving into Yerba Mansa with y'all today is not only because I love Yerba Mansa and it's such a powerful medicine with a long laundry list of uses, but also because you just cannot tell the story of Yerba Mansa without talking about legacies of indigenous stewardship, the need to recognize and restore indigenous sovereignty, long-term effects of climate change, drought and rising temperatures, loss of healthy and intact riparian habitats due to industrial and urban development, plant population decline due to commercial over-harvesting and wildcrafting, and the necessity of wild tending and native plant restoration. It's a suspenseful story, and all the dramas of today in our herbal world intersect here at Yerba Mansa's feet. Before we even get on the road, before we even crack open the herbals and get down to the therapeutic indications of Yerba Mansa, the botany alone is intriguing. Yerba Mansa is a member of the Soraceae family, also known as the lizardtail family. Yerba Mansa is one of 10 known species in the lizardtail family, but only 7 species survive today. Several others went extinct between the Miocene and the Cretaceous period, anywhere from 77 million to 3 million years ago. All the surviving species are native to either southern and eastern Asia, Korea, Japan, China, Taiwan, Myanmar, India, Thailand, Vietnam, and North America, Canada, the United States, Mexico. Within the lizardtail family, most family members seem to thrive in wet soils and aquatic or semi-aquatic environments. The family belongs to an order, the Piperales order, which includes relatives such as kava kava, black pepper, the Aristolochia family, and wild ginger. Yerba Mansa's Latin colonizer binomial name is Anemopsis californica. Anemopsis is monotypic, meaning that the botanical family tree or taxon contains only one species. There are no side branches, no local variations, no endemic curiosities, no cultivars, no hybrids. There's only Anemopsis californica. This is unlike a lot of plants that we know. For instance, mugwort, where we have a diversity of mugwort species abound. Artemisia californica, Artemisia douglasii, Artemisia chinensis, Artemisia vulgaris, and on and on. Another example of a monotypic plant is Ginkgo biloba. For all the ginkgos out there, from the 4,000-year-old Grand Ginkgo King in Guizhou, China, to the teenage ginkgos lining so many streets in West Oakland's lower bottoms, there is only but one species they all belong to, Ginkgo biloba. I think the monotypism is an important point to stress as we begin our search for Yerba Mansa, as diversity typically improves a species' survivability and odds of adaptation and continuation amid environmental pressures. And our search will take us face to face with small stands of Anemopsis ecking out a monotypic living between environmental pressures and adversity, but will also travel through the historic records of botanical observations, which in and of themselves tell both the story of the plant's prolific range via indigenous stewardship and its shrinking habitat as it weathers colonialism, environmental destruction, and climate change. For instance, let's start our search now. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to hop on the internet and research an observation history of Yerba Mansa. For this, I'll turn to calflora.org and use their plant finder and inquire into Yerba Mansa. And voila, a map of California pulls up with points of observations from as far back as 1850 to present day. A quick study of the observation map gives the impression of Yerba Mansa's range and that this plant favors the southern part of the state definitely and down into Baja. There are a tremendous amount of observations coastally from SLO to Los Angeles to San Diego counties and continuing on into the transverse and peninsular mountain ranges outside LA and San Diego. Anemopsis's range continues up the east side of the Sierras, then fans out, peppered throughout Inyo County and on into the Great Basin. A thin band of observations traveling up the southern coastal mountains indicates that Yerba Mansa's range extends into the East Bay and Delta ecologies of the Central Valley. Looking closer into the Bay Area, at first glance, the map seems to show that there's a healthy chunk of Yerba Mansa populations here and there across the East Bay, with some real far-out outliers in the north and northeast of the state. There's a few observations a day's trip away to the south and southeast. But when I take a closer look, juxtaposing the historic record of observations against today's satellite imagery, a very different story emerges. So I'm here at my computer and I'm focusing on specific observations. I'm going to just walk you through what I'm finding. So here's one from 1935 in Sutter County. The point is smack dab in the middle of what looks like a newly planted orchard or vineyard, like completely covered in plastic. I doubt that that Yerba Mansa is still in existence. We have an observation from 1959 in Lodi, and there's a big commercial building right on top of the observation point amid a dense commercial and residential neighborhood. Here's a point in Milpitas in 1962. There's a house smack dab on top of this point. An observation point in Shasta County from 1914. There's now a farm on top of the observation point and what looks like a shed atop a raised dirt lot behind a farmstead. I wonder if that's actually a pump house and the whole remote acreage is pulling off the well that once fed the original Yerba Mansa, or if the creek nearby used to have a spur over towards that direction. Here's a point recorded in 1947 in Contra Costa in Dublin, and it's now the parking lot of an ExxonMobil gas station. 1915 Merced County, Los Banos, under a paved sidewalk in front of a pest management office. One here in Alameda County in East Oakland recorded in 1966 on International and 16th Ave, and there's a house right on top of the point, amongst a city block of large industrial buildings, and you can see where this area was once a marshy extension of the Bayshore, which is now just underneath an embarcadero of name brand motels, the 880 highway, the freight and passenger rail lines, and on and on. And this pattern goes on and on locally, where as you connect the dots from each observation to observation, the actual living range of Yerba Mansa shrinks and shrinks, to the point where entire counties that looked rich in Yerba Mansa, or at least were outliers where there might be a protected stand on the map, are actually now completely devoid of plants. The riparian corridors, the marshlands, the sand mineral springs that Yerba Mansa calls home, all buried beneath strip malls, the ghosts of heavy industry, dirt malls, track homes, old ag, highways, wet places that were pumped dry by cottage industries, pot farms, seasonal wetlands gone dry by the increasing pressure of high heat and severe droughts of our fossil-fueled climate-changed era. Eventually, I was able to locate a stand about an hour's drive from Oakland with a fairly recent observation date to boot. So I packed a lunch, my dog, and a field mic, and I'm going to head out on my first local search for Yerba Mansa. I left room in the car if you want to come with me. No pressure. The only rule is you can't tell anyone the exact location of where we're going. Deal? Deal. Okay, get in this car. We're going on an herbal adventure. You know, a thing I appreciate about botany and field work and herbalism is that it often takes you to a out in the middle of nowhere road that no one's on with spectacular views. You get lost, you've got to double back, you see something you've never seen before. And sometimes, like now for me, I get a view of a place that I've seen a million times, but from a new angle, a new perspective. I just really appreciate that. It's hard to get off the beaten path these days, and herbalism is one of the places that takes me to quiet, connected, blue roads off the beaten path. Where are we going? We're heading to a location out in the Carquinez Strait. This is a narrow waterway connecting the Suisun Bay and San Pablo Bay in the San Francisco Bay Delta watershed. This is the largest delta system in the west coast of North and South America, all of Western Turtle Island. Essentially, my backyard. Well, an hour's drive on a good day in my backyard, to be specific. Unlike our peony adventure, this plant looks like it will be a 5-minute walk from the parking lot in the middle of the suburbs. This is not an extreme remote location. In fact, I think this is our exit, and the location is only a few blocks from the exit. Okay, we're on site at the shoreline, somewhere between Segorite and Stockton. My first impression, this is exactly the kind of place that perfectly illustrates Yerba Mansa's predicament in terms of the environmental adversity working against it. To our left and west, we are flanked by big shipping industrial plots with active and rusted out cranes set up against the big blue sky. To the right and southeast are cookie cutter suburban track homes. The track homes are surrounded by strip malls, and we're within earshot of a 16-rail lane train yard. Our usual suspects that develop and expand into a flat riparian area, right here, all converging at this first glance at a local Yerba Mansa stand. As predicted, we had encountered these stands of Yerba Mansa no more than a 1-minute walk from the parking lot. There's two large stands. They're about 20 feet in diameter. We're standing at the end of a tidal marsh, a fingerling slough, or a tidal channel. The open water's edge of the Carquinez Strait is about a 2-minute walk from here. Down at my feet is a large stand of yerba mansa, maybe a 20-foot radius of plants on either side of the slough. The tidal channel is populated with native willows, salt grass, rushes, invasive pampas grass, cattails. There's some oaks and alders far afield. The bulb-shaped end of the slough is covered in water fern, a green-red blanket akin to pond scum. Being this far up the Carquinez Strait, while the water at first tastes fresh, it dries out the mouth shortly after. As I reach to taste the water, a bale of western pond turtles pour into the channel. The salinity of the water this far up the strait likely rises and drops depending on the seasonal outflow of the fresh water moving west from the Delta watershed and salt water moving east tidally from the San Francisco Bay through the 3-mile-long, 1-mile-wide Golden Gate Strait that connects the Pacific to the Bay. The water's fresh enough to support pond turtles and alders, but salty enough for salt grass and yerba mansa, and to leave a little cake of salt atop dry, bare soil around the channel. It's early in the year yet. I'm recording this in early March, and if you weren't looking for yerba mansa, you'd likely walk right by it without a second thought, mistaking them for an invasive lookalike like broadleaf plantain or young yellow dock. These plants are about 1 to 2 inches high. I'm using a ruler tattoo on my finger to measure right now. They will grow to be about 1 to 1.5 feet tall at their peak come midsummer. At this point, the most easily identifiable feature of the plant, while it's still small, is its taste, which is weirdly culinary, very aromatic, and somewhat between camphor, pine, and eucalyptus. In contrast, yellow dock leaves will taste like southern collards, plantain like spinach gone to bolt. No aromatics, no tingle on the tongue, no tingle left on the back of the throat. Furthermore, some key ID features to help you differentiate Anamopsis from other damp, soil-loving lookalikes are as follows. Yerba mansa will have red stems. The stems get more red as they get older, and there's a bit of red on the edge of the leaf blade usually. All the leaves are basal, emanating from the ground. They're ovate, green, and have a strong midrib. There's often a touch of hair at the meeting of the lower leaf blade and the leaf stem. As yerba mansa emerges from the root, alongside its first spring leaves will be deep red stolons. A stolon is an above-ground runner that will produce 1 to 3 new plants from nodes along its length. This is the same clonal reproductive mechanism as strawberries. When in flower come midsummer, yerba mansa produces a kind of white cone-shaped flower with 4 to 9 white petals on the bottom of the cone. These are actually bracts or modified leaves, and a yellow-white cone center akin to cone flowers like Rudbeckia or Echinacea. As yerba mansa is an herbaceous perennial, the above-ground structure of the plant will eventually die back at the end of summer, with the root surviving through late summer and winter and emerging again in the spring with fresh green leaves and red stolons. If I were to dig down underneath these plants, I would find very long, aromatic, ropey roots running deep into this silty, sandy, clayey soil. As far as I understand, the roots and stolons of this plant are doing the major work of reproduction, with the seeds being nearly non-viable. Yerba mansa is one of those plants that owes its expansive range to indigenous tending and distribution. As herbalist Michael Cottingham, a student and friend of Michael Moore, once taught myself and a large herbal cohort, Anamopsis is present at nearly every Paleolithic human settlement in the Southwest, with its roots being able to be carried fresh or partially dried for many, many miles. And still, those roots would have the viability to be able to be planted where they were brought and grown and transplanted far and wide. Outside of California, yerba mansa's greater range includes Oregon, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, northern Mexico, Baja California, and Kansas. Whenever I meet a fine stand of plants or an abundant ecology, I assume that this place has been tended by indigenous people long before I came along. It's like walking into someone else's garden. As well, one thing I like to tell my herbalist students, if you're fixing on making a place your spot, never assume that your spot is yours alone. Your spot is likely everybody else's spot in town, maybe even a few towns worth of everybody's. best to just leave it alone, grow the herbs at home if you can, and come back to spread the stand out a bit when conditions allow. Geez, I came to connect with Yerba Mansa, you came to connect with Yerba Mansa, and here I am tearing your ear off about every little thing. You know, this is a nice spot. It's quiet, it's unassuming, it's way out off the beaten path. The Yerba Mansa seems happy here. Why don't we head out and plan for our next mission to find Yerba Mansa back at home? I think my friend Angela said she knows a spot out near Mount Diablo, known also by its Ohlone name, Tushtalk. On my drive up to that stand of Yerba Mansa, I kept thinking about some hard truths I've learned over time in the fields of horticulture, botany, and herbalism, that despite how awe-inspiring and large and beautiful and expansive the wilds of California are to me today, it's only a fragmented remains of a once unfathomable abundance. The truth is that since colonization, 90% of the old-growth redwood forests have been logged. About 90% of the Great Valley's vernal pools have been destroyed. Only 10% of the Great Valley's native grasslands remain. And in relation to our focus on Yerba Mansa today, it's estimated that about 90% of California's original coastal marshlands, Central Valley and desert riparian areas too, have been lost. Even in light of such epic losses, there's no better time than now to help heal the land and restore native ecology and indigenous sovereignty, especially when we're talking about Yerba Mansa, who's a big healer of the people and is also a healer of the places where it inhabits. You're listening to Planting Medicine on KPFA, and in the next half hour, we'll learn more about the ways Yerba Mansa can heal people and places, as well as the many medicinal uses of Yerba Mansa. I'll also share the best techniques to grow Yerba Mansa at home. This and a field trip to a very different kind of Anamopsis stand here in the Bay Area, where we will be joined by my good friend and botanist, Angela Pye. But before we move on to these next chapters of our travelogue, we're going to take a short musical break. And our song for today is Yerba Mansa by the group La Orquesta La Renovación.
Mansa, que de la brava
Welcome back, listeners. You are listening to Planting Medicine on KPFA on unceded Lijian Ohlone land in Berkeley and KPFK on Tongva land in Los Angeles. You just heard the song Yerba Mansa by the group Orquesta La Renovacion. I'm today's host, clinical herbalist, California native plant nerd, and tattoo artist, Violet Moon. And before the musical break, we were returning home from a field trip to the Carquinez Strait in the SF Bay Delta, visiting a stand of Yerba Mansa, a California native plant famed for its broad medicinal value. Having returned home, now we're back in my apothecary. I think that this is the right setting to begin our deep dive into the medicinal uses of Yerba Mansa, aka Anamopsis californica. For listeners, this is a great time to grab your pen and paper and get ready for note-taking. The apothecary is lined wall-to-wall with shelves. We are closed in by large Boston Brown stock bottles of finished tinctures, endless canning jars of carefully dried leaves, flowers, and roots, herbal textbooks, geographic maps, regional identification guides, and medicine-making tools and apparatuses of all kinds. As well, appropriately enough, there's actually Yerba Mansa all around me in the apothecary. There's a bottle of ground Yerba Mansa leaf and alcohol steeping on the shelf behind me, a water bowl of a few dozen Yerba Mansa divisions growing in my windowsill waiting to be transplanted to the garden out back. There's a second water bowl filled exclusively with Anamopsis stolons that had fallen off older plants during transportation from my house to the nursery, growing on a different windowsill, and a pile of my notebooks from different herb schools, apprenticeships, and my favorite herbal guide stacked up like a tower by my side, all bookmarked at their respective start to Yerba Mansa chapters. Yerba Mansa has so many uses. It took me more than a dozen books, multiple conversations with many herbalists, and years of my own experience in my own herbal practice to build a comprehensive materia medica for our show today. And still, I feel like I'm not even scratching the surface of all the different physical and spiritual ways this plant is used across so many different diverse hands, lands, and medicine ways. First off, Yerba Mansa has a number of names. Not just Yerba Mansa, not just Anamopsis californica. It's also known as Yerba del Manso, Manso, Lizard Tail, and Swamp Root. In Spanish, Yerba Mansa means calm herb, but the name Mansa or Manso may also come from the word remanso, which means backwater or pool, referencing the plant's wetland habitat. When preparing the plant for medicine, we primarily use the root, as it's the most potent part of the plant. The leaves are weaker and simpler constituent-wise, but they make great medicine in and of themselves. The leaf is more water-soluble and has more numbing opioid-like compounds. We can use the roots fresh or dry for tea, and we can tincture the roots fresh or dry. Leaves are easy to dry, while the roots require patience as they take a long time to cure and may need filleting into long slices halfway through the process, akin to how reishi and licorice are cut lengthwise in TCM preparations. Once dry, you can store the leaf and roots whole in airtight jars, kept in a cool place out of direct or bright indirect sunlight. Some of our first aid protocols call for grinding the dry root and leaf. I'd recommend doing so closer to when you'll need and use them, as powdered herbs spoil faster than when they are stored whole. First and foremost, we usually think of Yerba Mansa as an astringent. Astringents shrink or contract body tissues. So Yerba Mansa is rich in tannins. It's astringent to connective tissues and membranes. It also stimulates better fluid transportation vis-a-vis astringency. And if oak bark is a heavy astringent and rose is light, think of Yerba Mansa as a medium-strength astringent. Yerba Mansa is also antibacterial and antifungal. You can use it externally for first aid, as a dressing and powder for abrasions and contusions. You can use it as a chaw, as one would with yarrow, for little boo-boos, scratches, and road rashes. Yerba Mansa medicinally helps burst biofilms of bacterial colonies. These biofilms help protect bacterial colonies from our medicines. So by bursting the biofilm, you can help give medicines legs against bacteria. Yerba Mansa may also help with Lyme's patients, as the medicine deals with spirochetes. It may help with H. pylori, things like athlete's foot, and many other interventions where an antibacterial is needed. Yerba Mansa is famed as an anti-inflammatory. Inflammation due to irritation, injury, and infection, especially after the acute phase of an imbalance or injury, when the hot phase of repairing is over, but the body is stuck in a cold, congested, non-repairing phase of inflammation. That's a great time for Yerba Mansa. Yerba Mansa is aspirin-like in its anti-inflammatory effects, can also be helpful for arthritis and rheumatism. It's said to rival turmeric, may even be better than turmeric. It's really nice used with turmeric. It's helpful for achy joints, tendons, and tight muscles, and to flush out inflammation. Anamopsis is also strongly antiviral. It's helpful for chronic disease and illnesses of all kind, especially with a viral or lymph component, i.e. Epstein-Barr, herpes, HIV. It's also helpful alongside cold and flu herbs for upper respiratory illness. The leaf and tea are great baths or sitz baths for HPV, herpes outbreaks, fissures, and the times and places when bacteria, viruses, and funguses collide. Yerba Mansa also works on the lymph system. It's very moving and stimulating to the lymph system. If we back up to the statement I paraphrased off Michael Moore in the inflammation section of this Materia Medica, quote, especially after the acute phase of an imbalance or injury, when the hot phase of repairing is over, but the body is stuck in a cold, congested, non-repairing phase of inflammation, end quote. You know, that's speaking to a fluid transport and lymph system issue, and the body having a hard time eliminating the slough of dead white blood cells and waste products of the immune system. We use the plant for upper respiratory itises, upper respiratory inflammations. It's great as a nasal spray for hay fever, a head cold, dust, environmental allergens. It's great in a neti pot, hydrosol, or tea. It's great for bacterial infections in the mucous membrane, great for chest congestion and coughs, asthma, and sore throats. Great for post-nasal drip, relief from inflammation in the sinuses. It's great alongside other allergy herbs. It potentiates them. It opens you up immediately, and it combines well with red root. For a lot of the upper respiratory issues and inflammation, such as laryngitis, tonsillitis, swollen lymph nodes, etc. Yerba Mansa makes the list of Mylon-sheathed regenerating herbs, which include lemon balm, oat straw, lion's mane, and lavender, alone or used together. Anamopsis works on the mucous membranes. The mucous membranes are located primarily in the mouth, lungs, digestive tract, and the urogenital tract. It's helpful for mouth, gum, and throat sores, ulcers of the stomach and duodenum, for boggy membranes in the intestinal tract. It improves cohesiveness of capillaries that live in the epithelial connective tissue that lines our mucous membranes. As a diuretic, the plant stimulates excretions of nitrogenous acids, especially uric acid, making the plant helpful for gout. Yerba Mansa is helpful for everyday small digestive issues such as loose stools, inflammation, gas, and weirdness after eating something surprisingly foul or off. Yerba Mansa is a great veterinary herb. It's great for animals, helpful for periodontal disease, respiratory issues, mange, UTIs, and topical first aid applications. The plant is generally safe for long-term use. There's no real contraindications save for overdrying a person. You can offset this concern by taking Yerba Mansa with a tall glass of water or combining it with something mucilaginous like marshmallow root, licorice, violet leaf, or plantain leaf. Yerba Mansa is pretty strong, so a little goes a long way. 10% of Yerba Mansa in a general formula is usually plenty to get things moving and to potentiate the other herbs. Yerba Mansa plays well with others. It is in so many different combinations for the things that we've gone over across so many different traditions. It would take a whole nother radio show for me to get into the combinations of herbs that Yerba Mansa plays well with. Yerba Mansa is also great as just a simple. A simple is a one herb formula. It's great on its own. One dropper full is probably enough to get the expectoration going, enough to get the connective tissue, mucous membrane toning effects happening. A sip of tea, a half cup of tea. You're not looking for vast amounts. You're really just looking for consistency of use, making sure you do it once or twice a day, one or three times a day, rather than using copious amounts of Yerba Mansa. In traditional Chinese medicine, yerba mansa is considered acrid, bitter, warm, and aromatic. It enters the lung, bladder, and spleen channels. If one is looking to tap into the more spiritual aspects of yerba mansa, say using a flower essence, taking a sip of tea or one drop of tincture will get you there. Yerba mansa as an essence, as a spiritual medicine, is indicated for those who need lightening in the emotional realm. It's for rigid people. It's to help people hold things together without the rigidity, without the tension of holding it together. And I know from my own use, it told me that it helps one grow and follow one's path without overshadowing or stepping all over other people. Yerba mansa shares space well with itself and its own plant colony and with the plants around it. So that's where I picked up on that when I sat with yerba mansa years ago in a big stand in a giant sulfur hot spring in Arizona. Now let's talk about growing yerba mansa. We've talked a lot about the plant and how it is negatively impacted by urbanization, climate change, the disappearing of water systems in riparian areas due to drought, and all kinds of environmental pressures. I think growing it at home is a really important thing that we take upon ourselves as a practice to sustain anamopsis and keep it around in our communities and help us heal the land and heal ourselves. And of course, yes, we do grow yerba mansa at home because we would like to have a small stock of ready material to make medicine with nearby us, and also to sustain the wild populations that are still thriving around in our native habitats, but also because if you wild take or wild plant in riparian areas, those are often places that have a lot of runoff from industrial ag, and there's pollutants there that are hard to see right off the get. You can't tell a plant is in a polluted environment, and it doesn't take much to turn a medicine into something that may actually have more harm than good. Furthermore, here's an interesting fact. One of yerba mansa's big claims to fame is being an analog or a stand-in for golden seal, Hydrastis canadensis. They both share antibacterial strengths, and they're both for subacute congestion of mucous membranes. This is mentioned by herbalist Michael Moore, as well as Michael McGuffin, president of the American Herbal Products Association, who passed away in February 2025. Golden seal is an extremely popular plant with really potent medicines that has been wildcrafted almost to the brink of extinction. Golden seal is native to southern eastern Canada and the eastern United States. Here is a Wikipedia factoid that I think is important to read. Canada, as well as 17 of the 27 U.S. states where golden seal grows natively, have declared it threatened, vulnerable, or uncommon. More than 60 million golden seal plants are picked each year without being replaced. Although golden seal's geographic range is wide, it is found in only small quantities in these habitats. I have a plant, yerba mansa, that can do similar things as golden seal, and that yerba mansa is so easy to grow. Not only is it easy to grow, but it grows quickly. Whereas golden seal needs about 3 to 5 years to be a potent enough plant to make medicine with. Growing yerba mansa, in my opinion, is easy peasy. You only just need some sun and a soil environment that stays moist all the time. Although I've never seen it wild growing anywhere outside of some salt water, it does grow just fine and normal with fresh water at home in the garden. I even knew a friend who grew theirs in a steel dog water bowl, no soil, just water. And it was fine, happy, lots of stolons. Since it's the roots that we want to harvest for the most potent medicine, I recommend growing yerba mansa in deep garden beds as they want enough room to pitch ropey, tangly, shrimpy roots straight down and not side to side. I grow mine in deep, wide, non-draining beds, like a deep Rubbermaid storage tub filled an inch or two to the brim with regular garden soil. Every week or so, I'll flood the bed with water, and the yerba mansa should draw up enough water at a rate that keeps the water from getting swampy and anaerobic, especially if grown in partial to full sun. Once the plant dies back to the root, Don't stop watering. The plant will still want a riparian environment level of steady water and dampness. It's going to be hard to remember to keep that soil damp once the yerba mansa has died below the soil line come the end of summer. So a trick that I use is I use a ground cover on top of the bed using plants such as self-heal and violet, as they are also water needy and evergreen, and they can help remind me to keep the soil damp throughout the times when yerba mansa is underground. Okay, woof, that was so much materia medica. Is your head spinning? I feel like there was also stuff that I didn't tell you because it was so complicated or hard to pronounce, or things that I don't use the plant for that I would just need more experience in before I share with you. Let's get back to the travelogue, the search for yerba mansa. For my second attempt at connecting with a local yerba mansa stand, I elicited the help of my good friend, road dog, and professional botanist, Angela Pye, who was excited to observe Anamopsis in a little-known location in the foothills of Mount Tushtalk, also known colonially as Mount Diablo. Why don't you pack a lunch and come along with us? I've got a 2002 Honda CR-V with a seat waiting for you in the back. The only rule is, you can't tell anyone where we're going or where we've been. You might also have to bear with me that my mic is not great in the field, and I might have to narrate a little bit as we go. Deal? Deal. Let's go. Okay, should we introduce you now?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Angela.
Hi. Hi, Violet.
Thanks for coming on this trip with me.
Oh, yeah. This is so fun. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. Do you want to introduce yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I guess I'm a botanist. I look at plants. I identify them. I don't know. I nerd out about plants.
Yeah, you're like my road dog for all the real trips.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun trips together.
Yeah, we have some good stories of shenanigans. And we've had some real wins.
We've had some exciting trips, some dips, some flat tires.
That's true. I feel like we caught air once while you were driving, which I was like, I'm like, we're in this now.
I think that was the same trip with the flat tire.
It was, definitely.
Yeah.
Unrelated.
We hiked up a mountain to see some cool gentians.
Some gentians.
But yeah, we've had some adventures.
It's true. And you were a rare seed collector.
I did, yeah. That was in a past life.
Yeah. How long did you do that for?
I think about 3 years. Looking for rare plants and collecting seeds.
Yeah, what's your favorite part of doing that? Or what's your favorite part of botanizing in general?
No, I guess it's just like another way of understanding the nature around me. For me, plant ID helps me slow down and really look at a plant, like things I might not notice otherwise, like weird little features, like cool hairs. So, yeah, and I just love flowers. I love to see a plant. They're just cool. I feel like, just make life so much better.
Anything you like about Anamopsis in particular?
I think it is so pretty. I love that it has those red stolons. I have seen it, like, maybe 3 times, like, in the quote-unquote wild, and it just looks really different in each place that I see it. I don't know that I totally understand it yet, but it's kind of special because it's the only plant in its family, in the lizardtail family, in California. And here in the East Bay, in, I guess, you know, Alameda and Contra Costa counties, it is locally rare. It's just not super common.
I guess I don't understand it either. It's got, wears a lot of faces, like where it lives.
That's part of what makes it interesting and exciting.
So from where we are to the spot that we're going to, oh, it says it's only an 11-minute walk. You want to walk?
Yeah, let's check it out.
Okay, this is Violet here, and I'm going to provide a little narration since the field recording gets a little hard to decipher. Angela and I are hiking to see Yerba Mansa in the foothills of Mount Diablo. We are in a big oak woodland, oak savanna. It's unseasonably hot for March. The sky is a brilliant blue hue. Valley and blue oaks are electric green with fresh spring leaves. The grass is green, and we head towards a little crease in the sun-drenched hills where some oaks and buckeyes are providing shade to a hidden gurgle of spring water about 10 minutes away from the parking lot. Okay, now we'll jump back to the recording where Angela and I are encountering the stand of Yerba Mansa for the first time.
Yeah. Let's go down.
I saw the yellow dock and was like, oh, that's kind of...
Well, I was noticing just over there, like, oh, the water's starting to have that kind of sulfury look.
Oh, there's so much. And I also would not expect so much buttercup right next to where it is.
Oh, look at those red stones.
Whoa, they go right up the side of that, like, little sheer face.
Yeah, you can kind of see like some of the older leaves from past seasons. Ooh, look at that, it's so fleshy and bright red.
They're really happy.
And some of it is in the water.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty deep spot right there.
Yeah.
What is this book?
This is, this is the Flowering Plants and Ferns of Mount Diablo, California.
Yeah, is this helpful? You like this book?
I love a local flora. It's just like so much nicer than carrying around the entire Jepson manual. There's no point in doing that. And I just feel like there's a lot of really useful historic information in here. So in here, there's a note that says, in August 1936, this species was apparently no longer growing. And the newly improved road passes over the place where it grew. So that population, I guess, disappeared in 1936 because they built a road. And then...
Yeah, it's got a comment on this site.
Yeah. It has not been determined if the road population discovered by C. Thayer is natural or one of several reintroduction attempts. So we don't even know if this like was here before. Or if it was planted.
How would we find out about reintroduction attempts?
I feel like there's just a lot of like rumors that get cycled around. I feel like in the past people just kind of did whatever and like planted what stuff wherever they wanted to. They're just like rare plants that people were like, oh, we're just gonna like try putting them here. So someone would be like, oh yeah, that population around that spot is planted.
I was thinking like, yeah, maybe just an indigenous person planted it here.
Yeah, which raises the question of like what the plant population in the Bay Area looked like before colonization. Like, was it, you know, like had it been introduced like into certain areas so that it could be medicine?
Yeah, I think it's funny. There's like so many plants that I want to know as medicines and it requires going really far out. So far, the search for Yerba Mansa is like, it's just right off the road. It's like somewhat anticlimactic. So if it's a salt spring, it doesn't dry out all the way?
So I think this is actually a sulfur spring.
Okay.
I don't know what it looks like when in the summer, but there's a little bit of water flowing right now. We can see like a tiny trickle.
Is sulfur salty?
I guess it probably.
Known for a distinct rotten egg odor, these springs often appear near volcanic activity, where underground heat and gases react with groundwater to create acidic, mineral-rich water frequently used for therapeutic mud baths and spas. Beyond sulfur, these waters often contain calcium, magnesium, or sodium. So there you go.
Okay, so this is from calflora.net, and anemopsis is from two Greek words, anemone and opsis, meaning anemone-like, in reference to the resemblance of the inflorescence to a flower in the genus anemone. There you go. So they thought it looked like an anemone.
Oh wow, look, it's really even right behind me.
Whoa.
Look how pretty that is. It's ready to spread.
Yeah, the stolons are cool. Maybe the cows will let us go up a little bit. Yeah, there's a little bit up here. But yeah, they are just stepping in all of this.
It's pretty gross.
That's another environmental factor I didn't think of when thinking of threatened ecology is cows stomping all over it. A lot of galls out here on these oaks.
There's like some fresh green ones, yeah. Oh my God, how hot is it gonna be tomorrow?
It's supposed to just keep going up, and then next week it's like 80 degrees every day.
No, yeah. My God, it's gonna be 87 on Thursday.
Yo, it's March.
It's never gonna rain again.
Yeah, I was so happy to get so much rain because I was like, oh, everything's gonna have time to just fruit and flower and take its time.
Yeah.
And now it kind of seems like now it's all gonna get hurried along really fast. All right, where to next?
Should we walk back to the car?
Yeah. As Angela and I walk back to the car, we made plans to travel together on our biannual desert trip down to Southern California and did some investigating as to the exact location of where the sulfur spring nursing the Yerba Monza stand emerges. All in all, the stand followed a thin 2-foot ribbon of water and sparsely covered a distance of about 40 feet. A stone's throw from a paved road, a suburban intersection, and grazing cows. This immensely powerful medicinal plant hanging on to a thin strand of water, an ephemeral mineral lifeline. Amid a week-long, record-breaking heat wave across California. You know, there were so many amazing projects and well-known herbalists I reached out to, hoping to add to this conversation today. As we wrap up our search for Yerba Monza, I want to thank Angela Pye, for sharing her time and infinite passion and wisdom for plants with us and with me. And thank those stands of anemopsis we met along the way and all the plants and all the people who are fighting the good fight against all odds. This episode of Planting Medicine will be archived at kpfa.org, and I will leave you all footnotes on the archive to the many resources I tapped to make this show possible. I'll leave y'all today with a question to ponder until our show next Tuesday. What is a medicinal plant you'd like to see more of planted around your community? Thank you all for listening to Planting Medicine on KPFA. Find us online on Instagram at Planting Medicine. And I'd like to thank Kirsten Thomas on the controls. Hey, Kirsten. I'm Violet Moon, and I've been your host today. And you can find me online at witchcraftapothecary.com and on Instagram at witchcraft_apothecary. Join us again next week with host Rene Camila, who will be discussing health supremacy and herbal resistance with Tuan. Until next time, I'm wishing you all access to medicine, care, and connection.